Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Podcast of Honor here on PWPonderings.com. It's been a little while since we talked some Ring of Honor news, and several shows have occurred since, including the Ring of Honor All-Star Extravaganza pay-per-view, which left quite a bit of discussion about the show. Realize it's a little bit later, so we're probably not going to do an entire rundown of every match. But, of course, I am here with Ari Berenstain. Ari, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
And
Be
Chris
back.
Yes. And Chris Micchio as well. Micchio, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man.
So overall, so All-Star Extravaganza occurred roughly a month ago by the time you're listening to this. And I reviewed it live for the show. I don't remember everything in great detail, but some of the main points, obviously, Jay Lethal, he's still Ring of Honor and television champion. You also have you have new tag team champions. You saw the return of the All Night Express, which was a lot of fun. I believe some of the undercard matches actually outperformed some of the main event matches, in my opinion. A lot of people also liked, I want to say they liked pretty much, you know, the tag title match, but maybe not for the reasons that you would assume. And then, of course, the overall end of the night thing that everyone was talking about, the turn again of Adam Cole remaining with his cohorts in the Kingdom, turning on Kyle O'Reilly. And you know what? I'm just going to get this out of the way. You know, Ari, did that make sense?
Yes, it did. Although I think all of us kind of predicted it would have happened later rather than sooner. So I think this really caught a lot of people by surprise, including me. Although I do want to go and say and just reinforce that I believe All-Star Extravaganza 7 is actually the Ari is Right Extravaganza 7, because if I do recall, gentlemen, that I called a couple of different results here and got them right. I did say Jay Lethal would retain both titles, and I did say the Kingdom would win the title, the tag team titles, and they did. And I believe I called gave credence to a little bit to the All Night Express coming back, and they did.
Yes.
So this was a night where I looked back on my Twitter feed. I think I was going crazy, and
yeah, you are.
Just really happy that my prognostication skills are never the best, but this was my equivalent of GST calling Jay Briscoe winning the world title back at Supercard of Honor a couple years back. The show itself was good. It was a really, really top-to-bottom wrestling show, focused on the matches. Every match got a lot of time. Every match was quality. Nothing was too over-the-top, but there were a couple of good show-stealing performances. Moose and Cedric Alexander, I think, did a great job. And I think Kyle O'Reilly was fantastic in the main event. And Adam Cole, the story of him turning heel. What a fantastic moment.
Agreed. Though I don't know about it being a fantastic moment, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Micchio,
fantastic for Adam Cole.
Oh yes, for Adam Cole, sure. Yeah, maybe not for everyone. Micchio, what were your overall thoughts on the show?
I didn't get a chance to watch it until recently because I was on vacation actually. I was actually on a plane when the show was going on, and I was following Ari's excited tweets of on the Wi-Fi on the airplane, which was entertaining. Kept me awake for the 6-hour flight I was on, but I watched the show and I thought it was really I thought it was good, but you know there were some of the matches were like we were talking about it before, but you know before we got on the air today that we you know both I think Chris and I were both really you and I were both really kind of let down by the Castle and Silas Young match, but the reality is it's like a match then like Moose versus Cedric Alexander more than made up. You know, for any disappointment you had from an earlier match, because those guys I thought worked way above what I expected when I did watch it, and I was really impressed by both of them. I thought it was a really, really well done match. The Cole turn, we all kind of like Ari said, we all did say that it was going to happen. We just didn't know it was going to happen this early. It fits best with his character. He's a natural born heel, so there's really no reason to waste that ability as a heel. Trying to run around and masquerade as a babyface. But the match I probably thought that I enjoyed the most was the four-way for the number one contender for the championship match. I thought Elgin just dominated that match and really carried, you know, Lord, he lifted the heavyweight, shall we say, in that match, and he did an amazing, amazing job, and I was really impressed by him. But then the outcome with AJ hitting the Styles Clash on Cole, becoming the new number one contender, it sets up something very interesting, you know, considering all the politics that we've talked about on the show, especially dealing with AJ Styles. Now that Styles will get that shot, does that shot come at Final Battle? Does that shot come when ROH goes to Japan in February? It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But otherwise, I thought the show was really solid, and I really did enjoy watching it once I got the opportunity to do so.
That, for me, though, is kind of the issue with the Cole turn, is that we're supposed to believe that he did this on purpose, that he somehow knew that Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish were going to get title shots, and that the whole point of the Kingdom and him breaking up was because he was losing. And it's like, so did you purposely lose those matches? Which is kind of dumb. Particularly the number one contender match, so you knew you weren't going to win that, and so that you were going to continue on the streak of losing the big matches, not getting your title shot again, all to suddenly turn, oh no, it was all a ruse. We're just trying to get at you, Kyle O'Reilly. I was going to backstab you anyway. It's like, well, then why were you kicked out of the Kingdom? You know, if that was the whole point, if you're going to say that, oh, there needed to be a reason for him to be kicked out, and that that point is him losing, then he purposely lost those matches, which is kind of stupid.
Yeah,
I don't know if you could let me present the other side. I think maybe he tried to win all those matches as best as he could, and sometimes he won and sometimes he didn't win.
But the entire impetus of him being away or the Kingdom and him having a split was because he was losing. And right. then he reveals, no, it was all just a big plot. It was all a big plan. Then that means he purposely lost.
Right, and it would have made more sense if the Kingdom beat Fish and O'Reilly for the tag titles. Then it would have made more sense, not sure. Just to have to have them win the belts in the in the multi tag match. It's like, it's sort of like, okay, well that's great, but if they were setting up O'Reilly and Fish, they should have at least lost something valuable to them, not just title matches.
Yeah, I mean, would I have liked there to be more stakes in terms of setting this up in terms of a long-term pawn? Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, if you look at in and of that event itself, not necessarily maybe the stuff that came before it, but there was a lot of foreshadowing, a lot of stuff like Cole wearing the Kingdom outfit, like being introduced as representing the Kingdom, stuff that, like, if you're not thinking about it too deeply, it just doesn't register. And then when you go back and say, that makes sense. That, why didn't I see that coming? Stuff like on the TV tapings with him wrestling against Nakamura, which I guess we can talk about later, and wrestling a more heel in a very obvious heelish way. It's like, why would he do that? I mean, obviously it's Adam Cole being Adam Cole, and that's sort of like the Adam Cole we all know and love. But you look back at it and go, oh, they did that because that match is going to be airing after his heel turn, and it would make sense for him to act that way. You know, what the initial, I guess, moving away from the Kingdom and sort of siding with Red Dragon, which I saw at the TV tapings in New York, it definitely came about that Maria was, you know, basically saying that she was the leader of the Kingdom, and basically implying Adam Cole is, you know, sort of losing himself in the job there, sort of slacking off and not holding up his end. And he went with Red Dragon and sided with them because they welcomed him in. I mean, I guess that's just a bit of subterfuge and spying. And I guess your mileage on that's vary if you accept that. I definitely think they needed more time to sort of set the knife going into the back deal. But
Maybe a different reason why he was splitting away from the Kingdom. Because the whole crux of it is that they split from him because he was becoming a loser. And it's like, well, if we accept that as the premise, then that means he lost those matches on purpose.
Right.
Because if he hadn't lost those matches, what would the reason have been?
Right.
There was he wasn't arguing with Mike Bennett. He wasn't arguing with Tave. He wasn't having some weird affair with Maria or something, you know. Typical wrestling storylines.
It was more about his friendship with Red Dragon, kind of sort of, you know, supporting them and I guess supporting them over the Kingdom because he felt miffed by the Kingdom. So he put his seal of approval on O'Reilly and Cole in order to ingratiate himself into their goodwill. And then
Sure. If they had just stuck with that would have been fine. So I think that's kind of my issue with it, is that if they had just stuck with him and like, hey, my friendship with Kyle O'Reilly, this supersedes the stuff I've done with the Kingdom, or like, this is the only team we don't screw with. There's a storyline I have in my head, and it's from like the 80s, but I can't remember it right now. But it was a group of heels, and they messed with everyone except one particular guy because there was history there, and it made sense. So if they had done something like that, I'm perfectly fine with it. But to the point that they're like, oh, this was all just a big, I was gonna backstab you in the end anyway. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Except, well, then what was the point of you leaving the kingdom for that? So, but again, I'm not saying that we couldn't see it. Like, I agree with the Ari that they put out little bits here and there that you could tell, like, oh, he's probably gonna turn on them somewhere. Also, I think because in today's current wrestling culture, we almost expect that.
Yeah, especially from a guy that we all know is, a far more superior performer as a heel. I mean, Cole is a babyface, whatever, but when he does, he does his best work as a heel. We all know that.
Kind of staying on the same line of thought, though, what do they do with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish now going forward? I honestly don't want to see these guys as a tag team again. Not in the sense I don't want them to team together, but in the sense of like, I feel like they've elevated O'Reilly, and I want him to stay in that position.
But here's the thing: if you notice, you look going forward. You look at the Glory by Week, Glory by Honor Weekend. They're not on those shows. You look ahead to the Survival of the Fittest weekends, and I don't think they're listed for those shows either.
They're in Japan for
Yeah, so it's
the
like
Junior Tag League tournament.
maybe when they come back from from this extended tour of Japan, maybe then they work them back in more as a singles, but just like cohorts in a group, more like a stable than as a team, if you will. But at the same time, it's like I understand what you're saying, Chris. I kind of feel the same way, but it's tricky. I love them as a team, but at the same time, I'm tired. After this run, I want to see them more as individuals.
I think we will. I think we saw. I think that the one good thing of well, I mean, there's more than one good thing, but the best thing coming out for Kyle O'Reilly after the cold heel turn in the main event is the promo he cut afterwards that was put on Facebook and YouTube after the show, where he's just going off on Adam Cole, and it's probably the best Kyle O'Reilly promo that's been done in Ring of Honor anyway. And I think that sort of opens the door to showcase him as a singles. And I think Bobby Fish may continue along those same lines too. I think they should treat them the same way they started treating the Briscoes in the last few years, which is, they're together as a unit. They can tag together when they need to be a tag team, but that they're focused on their own individual paths at that point. And with Jay was the world title, defending world championship, and then occasionally he'd team up with his brother, but his brother also had a series of mid-card issues and rivalries and TV title opportunities, and I think they should follow the same path with Red Dragon.
So the other point, I guess, that we can talk about coming out of All Star Extravaganza was Silas Young is now in charge of the boys. Mikio, have you watched some of the recent Ring of Honor TV?
Yeah, I saw this week's episode. So I saw the first. I guess it was the first episode or the set with them with him at Beer City Bruiser kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the first episode of
they
the
gave
first
him a
episode.
pretty good beating. Yeah, I mean, the TV keeps the story going, but I like I said before, I was really underwhelmed with the match. I didn't think the match was all that good.
No, the match was not great, and I still say that
They had a
it
far
being
better
one of
match
the
at Best in the World.
Yeah, absolutely. The
yeah.
that ma the match at Best in the World was a lot better. It was probably twice as good.
Yeah, and I'm not really, I don't want to speak to whether like they had an idea and it just didn't come across well on t you know what I mean? Like sometimes you
Yeah.
can have this match and you think it's going to be good in your head, and then when you execute, you're like, oh, eh, that wasn't so great. But ultimately, I think there's going to be a lot of fun. And Ari, what do you think about this? What not necessarily
Well,
just the match itself on the show, but now that we're finally going to see the ramifications of it on TV, I'm still entertained by it. It's still a pretty good mid-card feud.
yeah, there's some clever stuff going on with the boys becoming men and what Silas Young is putting them through. There's Been a series of pictures on the Twitter of the men of the, I guess you can call them the men now, out of their outfits that they have at Dalton Castle, and just doing manly stuff, chopping wood and taking care of business, so to speak. And it's going to be interesting to see, because obviously Dalton Castle and Silas Young, they've been wrestling for a while. I think they're trying to lay off the in-ring stuff for a little bit and go back for one more match later. But it's pretty clear that the whole angle now is, you know, what Silas is doing to the boys, and it will be interesting to see if at the end of this they are sort of like in a psychological way siding with Silas Young over Dalton. Let's say Dalton wins them back, and you know they don't want to go back because they're men now, so they don't need Dalton. It'll be interesting. It definitely adds a lot of depth to the character of Dalton Castle in terms of, you know, at some point he's incredibly entertaining, but at some point the shtick may would or maybe losing its flavor. Not now, I would say, but I think there's always the threat of that happening,
Right.
and
Like
I
a
think
year,
by
if a year from today, he's still doing the same stuff. It's like,
right.
okay, what have we learned about you?
But I think there's some character growth now here, because we know that the boys were important to him. He's a very vainglorious individual, and for him to sort of like they're basically selling it as he's disappeared from television, that he's, you know, he's I wonder if they even frame it like maybe he's even abandoned the boys because he just can't handle losing them. But we'll see how the TV plays off of it. But it's very entertaining, and there's a lot of potential still to do some interesting things with it.
But I agree with you guys. I think it's good that they're going away from it for a little while, that they're going to give the feud a little time to breathe, kind of thing. And you know, you already see that at what on the show on the 23rd, the TV taping on the 23rd. Cole, it's going to be Cole and Castle, so that kind of gives it a little bit of room. And then I think Castle on the 24th is going against. He's in a four corner survival with Paige and Alexander and Compton, Cliff Compton coming back. So it's like, yeah, they're giving it room to breathe, and that's a good idea. It'll keep it fresh by not having it become something that we have to watch like 10, 10 shows in a row.
Right. Well, the other upside is that Silas Young is now teaming with the Beer City Bruiser as a pretty consistent tag team going up against the All Night Express and War Machine on the Glory by Honor weekend. Which, Beer City Bruiser, while I'm not like the biggest fan of him, it fits. You know, him and Silas, that is, you look at their two characters and go, yep, that's a tag team. It makes sense. So, and it's always good to kind of step away, right? I mean, I think that's something that is a lot of, we've all been critical of Delirious's booking from time to time here on the podcast. But something that he does do, I think, kind of well, he does stretch out certain storylines in terms of like you think of the wrestling that we watched when we were kids, that you didn't, even if guys were in a serious feud, you didn't see them have match after match after match against each other. There was time in between, and like the heel would make the baby face lose a match here, or and then the baby face would have his revenge and have the heel lose here, at another
Did
match.
you just say baby?
He did.
I
He did.
did. Yeah, shut up.
The baby face.
Exactly, which should be Adam Cole's face when you think about it. Anyway. But nowadays, and I hear this a lot when I'm watching Twitter, like say for example on Monday, it's like, oh look, these two wrestlers are having a match again, and then we're supposed to be excited about seeing them on the pay-per-view when we just saw them have a match.
Are you talking about Randy Orton and Sheamus?
No, I maybe because they've had like what 9 billion matches right now.
Yeah, I think they're like McDonald's, over 3 billion served.
Exactly, and then you're supposed to be all excited about them when it's supposed to build to a climax at a pay-per-view, but you're like, but I've seen this match like every week, twice on some weeks. So that's the one I do appreciate that Delirious does that. He can kind of stretch that out and makes us want to see the matches. I guess we should talk about Glory Bonner. I mean, Ari, there's some news. Should we just because they have released news about Survival of the Fittest, but that is occurring in November. Do you guys want to talk about Glory Bonner now, since it is the show's coming up?
Yeah, we should.
Sure,
Yeah,
sure.
let's get, you know, do
All
we
right.
want to, but here's the thing, do we want to talk about the TV taping, which is the Friday night first, or do we want to talk about the actual Glory by Honor show itself?
Yeah, let's talk about so Friday, folks, that is the TV tapings, which has as of even right now, two title matches on it. And then the Glory by Honor, Glory by Honor 14 takes place Saturday the 24th, main evented by a Champions versus All-Stars match. I mean, I feel like we should just talk about Glory by Honor first.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, when
the actual
that's,
show.
Yeah, no, I'm sitting here thinking about it. It's like, why didn't they just kind of put them both together as shows and then cut them up the way that they wanted us to see them on a TV format? That's something that just bugs me. I understand that they want to put some of them on, you know, be streamed live as they unfold on the website and generate some more revenue. But I think if you really wanted to have this all put together, you should probably have thought that out a little bit better than to have title matches taking place on a TV taping and then have a title match the next night live. It doesn't make sense, but whatever. You want to talk about Saturday first or Friday first?
Ari, what do you think?
I mean, I think we should do it in order of the date, but that's you know, I got one vote here. You guys have two, so.
Not talking about the TV taping, or actually talking about the TV tapings first, really wouldn't make much of a difference, because there is no championship match at Glory by Honor 14. It is a main event, Champions versus All-Stars, and I don't know. I'm never a fan of those. I don't think any of us are.
Here's my counter. Maybe they're throwing all these title matches on TV because they realize Glory by Honor 14 is just a house show, essentially, at this point. It's not a pay-per-view. It's not an iPay-per-view. You know, let's put all the title matches on TV where more people will see them.
That is true, yes. And, well, I kind of agree with that. This is the problem with a guy like me. I am just stuck in the past with the legacy that Glory by Honor is supposed to have.
Yeah,
and it's just a show.
I felt the exact same way when I was thinking about it. It's like Glory by Honor. There's been so many amazing ROH moments at Glory by Honor, and now it's a TV. Now it's a TV taping and a house show. It's like, come on, man. That would be like turning the anniversary show into like a house show. It's like, you don't do it.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Come on,
you
gotta go back to the future. You know, Friday, October 23rd. That's the day Marty and Doc. You know, they took him to war into 2015. So.
And the sad part is the time splitters will not be on that show.
It's not the right thing.
You know what, guys? I'm going to change my vote. Let's just talk about it in order because it really doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't. So the TV tapings taking
really
place.
I was really interested to talk about Adam Cole versus Will Ferraro, though. So now you've deprived me.
We're going to talk about that big matchup.
I hate to be a jerk, Ari, but it was the 21st of October, not the 23rd, that they go back.
I know. I was making one of those bad meme jokes.
So October 23rd in Kalamazoo, Michigan, we have the Glory by Honor 14 TV tapings. So what I'm assuming will be the main event of one show, the Ring of Honor World Television Championship is on the line. The House of Truth is banned. From ringside, Jay Lethal versus Roderick Strong, Lethal Strong 3. Probably going to be a good match. AJ Styles versus Donovan Dijak. The Briscoes versus the All Night Express, which is a rematch from All-Star Extravaganza. The Ring of Honor World Tag Titles are on the line as the Kingdom go up against the Addiction. Adam Cole versus Dalton Castle, which is another rematch. The Women of Honor, they're making a comeback, and we'll talk about that too. Leah Von Dutch versus Crazy Mary Dobson. Silas Young and the Beer City Bruiser with the Boys versus War Machine. ACH versus Cedric Alexander, and then signed to appear Michael Elgin, Caprice Coleman, and Moose. So, Mickey, I'll go to you first. Any of these matches kind of, I guess, stand out to you as something that is going to be must-see, and then where do you think they're going with them?
Okay, now, as far as must-see, no. Do I think that they're going to be decent matches to watch when they hit the when they're on the TV program? Definitely. Now, the question that I keep running through my head is, how many nights of TV are they taping with this show? Is it going to be is it 3 weeks of TV, or is it 4 weeks of TV? Because if you go 3 weeks, you figure the main events on TV will be, the television title match will be one of them. You figure the Briscoes versus the All Night Express will be another one of them. And then the tag team title match will be the third one. Is that what you guys are thinking too, that they're doing 3 weeks worth of TV at this taping? And then maybe taking something from the next night and making that main event of another show, of another TV show?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I could also see Cole versus Castle as the main event of a show if they want to do that. Because then again, they have Elgin, Caprice, and Moose still not signed to a match
But
as
did you
we
see,
record here. So.
do you see a match between, like, what match would you see between with those three guys who are unsigned for the, you know, who are signed but don't have matches yet? I mean,
Maybe maybe Elgin versus Moose,
and
and
then what do you do? Then what do you do with Caprice Coleman?
well, Caprice has something. They have something going on with that and the Prince Nana angle. I don't know where the hell it's going, but maybe this
You've
is where they
seen
pull the trigger
Nana's
on it.
tweets also then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I'm all for Twitter storylines. Why not? Draw on that social media.
So there's stuff they can do to stretch to a fourth week. I mean, hell, they taped essentially 5 weeks of television in Terminal 5 because they did the 200th episode is only one match plus highlights. So,
Well, if
it
they,
really depends on their scheduling.
yeah, maybe if they let the lethal, if they let Lethal and Roderick Strong go, like, you know, go a half hour, you know, 30, you know, 35 minutes kind of thing, then they can have one of the other, like, maybe like the Women of Honor match to be the lead in, and then just go with that, and that'll be your 40 some odd minutes of TV.
So, do we see a title change here for Lethal and Strong? I mean, Strong's been built up so much over the last year. He's had such a huge push in Ring of Honor and obviously around the Indies. It's been one of his best in-ring years. It's been a great year in terms of his conditioning, in terms of his personality has really shined a lot more than in previous years. But the question is, he's been losing so many times now to Lethal, or not winning. Because he had the draw at the pay-per-view at the iPay-per-view, and he lost the last match they had on TV for the world title. Is his consolation prize?
I don't think so. I really don't. I just, I don't, I don't, I don't really think it's going to happen for him. I just think right now they're just building it that Lethal is better than him, and it's going to go forward in that direction. And they'll, I really, because I really think ACH is going to take the TV title off of Lethal.
I would say I kind of fall in the camp of yes, because Strong finally signed with them in terms of a quote unquote semi-exclusive contract, which before he didn't have. So they have a little bit more, I don't want to say trust as if to mean that they didn't trust him before, but he signed with them. They know that he's there for the long term. And if he loses to Lethal again, then what good was this build? I mean. But at the
Yeah, I
same
see
time,
what you're saying.
I do agree with Mikio that it should be ACH. That should be a guy that they're building around for the future, particularly in the TV division, because Strong shouldn't be in the television division. Let's be honest. He deserves to be in the heavyweight title contention circle, I guess. But so it's like, could this have a ramification if he loses clean? I think so. I think fans will start saying again, "Oh, it's Roddy Strong. He can win all the matches except the big ones." And I also just don't want to throw out there that what if they do a wonky finish? Because the House of Truth is banned from ringside, but that doesn't mean someone else couldn't come in. And then it's like another wonky finish in Ring of Honor, which to me is becoming too frequent.
Yeah, it's almost reaching epidemic, you know, proportions here. It happens way too much at this point.
I mean, I wonder if Strong becomes TV champion, is that too much of a repeat? I mean, I know he was TV champion as a heel under the House of Truth. And so this would be a babyface run as TV champion, but it's almost like I agree with you. You guys say ACH, and obviously I've campaigned for ACH in the past, and I think Moose is a good TV championship contender, somebody that they could possibly give a title to at this point and push him. But the storyline, the way it's gone, the direction. I mean, Strong loses again. Either some sort of big angle has to happen to take him in another direction, or yeah, he gets labeled as that perennial loser. Which isn't productive. It's counterproductive, especially now that they've signed him to an exclusive contract. If he gets the title here, even if it's just a short run. It helps put the focus on competitive TV title matches, and then somebody who beats him pushes him really hard in another match, they get the rub off of him. But I don't know. I mean, I'm conflicted. I think someone should be Jay Lethal for the TV title since he's the longest running champion, and it should be someone who has never had the title belt before.
Exactly, and that's why, like, logically, you just go look. you look at the results of the two house shows that took place after after All-Star Extravaganza, especially with the four-way main event where ACH goes over, and you know, I don't think most people would have expected him to have won that match. I know when I watched it, I was like, wow, because I try to stay away from the results occasionally, and maybe I'd seen them, maybe I hadn't, maybe I just didn't remember them when I finally broke down and watched it, but it was like, to see ACH go over, you know, Cole and Moose and Elgin, it was sort of like, oh, wow, they're really pushing hard here now. They're going full bore with this. So it's like, and then you get the vibe that he's going to win the you know, the best of five series with Seidel. So you say to yourself, it's like, they're really going to be pushing hard. So why wouldn't you just keep that momentum going with him going into Final Battle? You would figure have Jay Lethal have two matches that night and have ACH beat him for the TV title, and then maybe, you know, have Lethal hold the ROH title. Or if he doesn't do that, if AJ is not available to come for Final Battle, depending on how that shakes out, you know, why not just do it like that? I mean, ACH seems to be the guy that they're putting a lot of their lot of their investment into, so why not just keep going straight with that? And you always have found something else to do with Strong, so you know, you can do it again. It's not like people are going to lose any kind of interest in him, because if that was the case, it would have happened already.
It's been such a huge push for him all year, though. They've been really been building and building and building. So then what if he doesn't win here, then what was all that build for? What was the point? You know, obviously other than having amazing matches and really getting, you know, some excitement for his in-ring stuff. And, you know, the stuff he's done in PWG has been fantastic in terms of a heel run. He goes back. I don't want to say he's like the Big Show or Kane of heel face turns in Ring of Honor, but he has gone back and forth a lot of times on the heel face side in his run in ROH. If not simply for the fact that he's been one of the most long, he has one of the most long tenures in ROH, going back to the early days of the company, like 2004, early 2005. So there's, you know, you kind of have to by necessity, but it's either he wins the TV title here and he becomes a fighting champion for a short period of time, or he has to go in a new direction, and I don't know what that new direction would be.
Then again, isn't having him win the TV title sort of like him taking a step down, because he's been fighting in these main event matches for the heavyweight title? It's like,
yeah, it's kind of a lose-lose. If he wins the title, he's back in the TV division. If he wins, he's in the TV. And if he loses, he's lost the Lethal three times, and this build was for nothing.
I think they're going to try and frame it as it's more about someone finally unseated Jay Lethal after his record-breaking longevity run for the TV championship. So hopefully there's some rub off that, but maybe the perception won't be that way.
But the perception will always be that the TV title is a secondary belt.
Yeah. But it might just be a good thing to have a change.
I think Jay Lethal kind of has done an RVD thing when RVD was ECW TV champ. Like, I think he's made that TV championship a lot more prestigious than it was.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. But I think in the minds of the fans, when you introduce a secondary belt to be under your heavyweight title, there'll always be a stigma to the belt of being the second title.
I think it's time. I want to be honest and say that when I saw the TV show this week, and you know, the TV belt is much smaller than the ROH world title belt, and Lethal has both. But now it feels like, as opposed to a couple months ago, where it's like, oh wow, here's a double champion. He's got two belts. That's excellent. Now it feels like, well, Jay Lethal's the world champion, and that world championship belt should be much more prominent than the TV title. And I think maybe it's time for him to drop the TV title.
Yeah, I mean, as of this recording, he's 562 days in. He's the second longest reigning champion in Ring of Honor history. So, yeah, you know, it's kind of a, I don't know. I'm excited for the match. So the match is going to be good. But no matter which way they're going to decide to end it.
Right. We were all kind of mixed on the draw, but the the world title match they had on television that aired a couple weeks ago was just amazing, and I was totally enjoying that for however long it went, and you know, even if it was cut by commercials, I thought the excitement of that match kind of really shone through. The crowd in Philly at that point was amazing. So yeah, these guys, you know, on the surface you know you don't think that they create that kind of excitement, maybe, but if you have perceptions of them in the way they were years ago, but this is I mean, two guys that are at the peak right now of who they are and who they can be as wrestlers. So, yeah, this is a great main event match.
I'm hoping at some on some compilation they actually include the full match, not the TV edited match, because I would like to see the thing in its entirety. Granted, I don't know how much was actually cut out, so.
You know, not to be remiss though, but you know, Ari bringing up the hot crowd stuff and all that. We gotta say something about that San Antonio crowd at All Star Extravaganza. They were really hot, and they were so into everything that was going on that night. I thought it was great. I thought they
And
were
it continued
great.
on the TV tapings too. Like the first run of TV, like the crowd was going bonkers for ACH versus Matt
They were
Sydal. And
awesome. That was an awesome crowd that they had, man. They really did. And let's be honest, it's a two-way, you know, it's a two-way street. You get the crowd is going to give you in return what you give them. And with what we've seen from the TV tapings from that night and what we saw from All Star Extravaganza, they really gave them a lot, and the crowd really paid them back with great interaction.
I agree, overall.
Absolutely.
So we'll see going forward on the television. So speaking of, like I said, the rest of the matches going on. We have the Kingdom versus the Addiction in a World Tag Team Championship match. I'm assuming none of us predict a title change so quickly.
No, I think it's fairly certain the Kingdom's going to be holding on to those titles for a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Although I think the Addiction make a great point, when they say they were not pinned for the titles, but I think this match is there to rectify that. And I think it's going to be interesting to see Sabin on the outside and Maria on the outside, and if there's any kind of shenanigans going on between the two of them.
The other thing I think that kind of, makes that point true about them holding the titles here. If you notice during the comment, if you haven't had a chance to watch the two recent house shows, there's a comment made that talking about the Young Bucks making ROH their home and being, that they're going to be doing a lot more work for ROH and that they're going to be, really in the title picture at this point. And it was just something subtle that was said. I don't remember which night it was, but it was there, and I was like, oh shit! I mean, that's They're obviously kind of, telling you, letting you know in advance that this is gonna maybe they're the guys who are gonna take the belts from the Kingdom down the line.
Well, I mean, you have the Kingdom, the Addiction, the Young Bucks, the Briscoes, the returning All Night Express. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say you could throw in. There's always the House of Truth tag team that's always around. So the tag division pretty strong, and then Silas Young and Beer City Bruisers and War Machine. It's a big division now. It's actually
It
kind
is.
of exciting.
Yeah,
So.
they got a lot of good stuff going on there. They really do.
And the Briscoes versus All Night Express, you're going to see the rematch on the TV tapings too. And I kind of like that. It's the All Night Express coming back strong. And I think we all said this on Twitter that that was a ballsy move by Delirious, and it's well worth it. He gave the ANX a big win. So
Absolutely.
hopefully going forward, they're not just another afterthought because they've shown that they can do it. So.
I think that, they had a big promo interrupting the Addiction. I think the fans are getting into them. Maybe this is a good thing to have a team from that era come back and again they also have in storyline Acclaim. They were never pinned. They were stripped of the titles because of what happened with Kenny King walking out of the company. And it's interesting. Of course, their team that was great is in their babyface team turn because they were. Against Haas and Benjamin, and they played well as the face. But I also get the feeling they're better as heels. But the heel side is stacked with the Kingdom and the Addiction already there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them in the future. I'm
So,
glad their awesome theme song is back.
oh yeah, no, that's a great theme. It really is. I will say that the Briscoes kind of returning to the tag team division. I mean, it takes Jay out of the focal point, and it actually gives Mark something to do, which is nice because he's just kind of there.
Yeah, he was languishing big time, man.
He was. So, I have no problem with it. And if they win the tag title somewhere down the line, and it's not that big of a deal, I guess. But we'll see when we get there. So, Women of Honor, they have really supercharged this movement. Again, we have Leah Von Dutch and Crazy Mary Dobson coming in for a match here. Ari, what do you think about this? This renewed push in Women of Honor, and obviously it's because of, I think, because of the NXT stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that has opened the door. A lot of the people who really made big waves and shimmer and even some in Shine. And, you know, and we're like several years ago when ROH had a stronger women's division, you know, they've a lot of them have made their way into WWE. And it's definitely shown, you know, that women are, you know, there's something I always used to do when I was writing Column of Honor was to review Shimmer DVDs and be very open-minded about all that. And the problem with ROH has always been, you know, they've only paid lip service to the Women of Honor concept. And once they lost their sort of connection with Shimmer, that was very, very weak in terms of what they did. Maybe they do a match every so often, but it was never really focused on. But on this weekend, you've got at least one Women of Honor match on every show. So that definitely shows some renewed focus on them, but it's definitely an uphill climb because this is, you know, they're bringing in wrestlers who the overall ROH audience may not fully completely be into or aware of. So Leah Von Dutch obviously has been around for a couple of years now. She has been featured in a number of different places. And Crazy Mary Dobson has made a few WWE TV appearances as, you know, sort of these extra characters. She's a really good wrestler. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what with the talent they have, can they make a go of this division? Because it's a lot of the people who I would have tabbed to be the feature performers for Women of Honor, they've been signed. I mean, Athena's gone. Jesse Mackay is in WWE. Casey Cassidy's in WWE in the NXT brand. So a lot of the, you know, top premier, the women who are most ready to be featured are now in NXT. Kana is there now. So it's going to be a big climb up for them, but this time they seem like they're ready to go and give that some attention. So let's see how it goes. I don't, you know, previously they haven't followed through. So I don't have a lot of faith that they will be consistent about this, but at least this weekend they're paying attention to it.
Mickey, what are your thoughts on the Women of Honor division, I guess, making a return since it has happened in the past?
Ari's more the expert on the women's wrestling angles kind of stuff because that's, you know, it's always been what he's, you know, he's been into.
I can't even say that anymore because I dropped out a while.
Yeah, I know, but you traditionally you kind of were. I will say this though, I agree with what you're saying that, you know, this is probably spurred on by what's going on with, you know, the girls, the women in NXT and what WWE has been doing with them recently. I just don't know that ROH fans, the hardcore ROH fans, are really going to be into it because every time that they've tried to do something like this, it's always been like a start and a stop and a start and a stop, and it just never really clicked the way that you would have expected it to, even though the work in the ring had been good. So it's maybe ROH is just, you know, maybe ROH fans just don't really find themselves all that interested in women's wrestling. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that they can gain some traction and they can get something going here because it is something that ROH as a promotion sorely misses. But at the same time, you know, if they don't have it, they don't have it. There's nothing that says you have to. But listen, if the product that they put out there is good enough that people really want to continue to see it and they can get momentum behind, then I think you can sell it. But right now, I have to look at it with a very skeptical eye.
So the next night is the actual Glory by Honor 14, taking place October 24th. Headlined by the Champions versus All-Stars, which is right now the Ring of Honor Champions, the World and TV Champion Jay Lethal, and the Tag Champions The Kingdom versus AJ Styles, ACH, and Roderick Strong. And I think we can kind of make similar inferences here. Whoever gets pinned, you know, whether it be a champion or one of the All-Stars, it's, going forward it should be an important storyline point. So I'm just going to, you know, How do you guys think this is going to go? Do you think it's going to be a progressing where, say, for example, the night before, if we presume that Roger Strong, you know, he is getting that TV title shot, and he is here facing Jay Lethal, even though it's not for a title, do you think he gets a pin here? Or do you think Styles does? Because Styles is the number one contender. Maybe he pins Jay Lethal to kind of foreshadow their match that's going to happen. Or even ACH. Whereas they could go kind of the quote-unquote easy route and pin one of the tag champions.
I think the smart route would be to have, you know, to have Styles go over Lethal to set up their title, their, you know, their heavyweight title match.
I agree. I wonder though, and I said this off the air too, if Roderick Strong does win the TV title, that definitely necessitates a change in the main event. It's going to have to go from a six man to what it traditionally is, which is an eight man tag, with Roderick Strong jumping on the other side and then having to bring in somebody who's not attached to a match at that point, or maybe somebody else who is, and just bring them back. Whether it's, you know, the Briscoes or the Addiction or Moose and Caprice, they're not attached to a match yet, as far as of this recording. But the finish itself, I think, should. I mean, it either has to go to AJ or ACH, as what Miguel was talking about before. If you're going to push ACH as a TV champion or a future TV champion, him getting the win over Lethal would be amazing, and Styles the same. Styles winning against Lethal would definitely push the concept that Lethal can't beat Styles yet. And, you know, the fans in San Antonio were cheering on and chanting the name AJ Styles at Lethal all night long. So there's definitely that kind of, there's definitely an interest in that kind of face off for the title, which I'm happy to see. I'm kind of surprised about, but there is some intrigue in pushing that combination at this point. So yeah, that should be the focus of the match, whatever, however form it ends up being, or taking place. So yeah.
I probably should have ran down the entire card. So we have that, the main event versus the All-Stars. War Machine versus the Briscoes. Donovan Dijak versus the unbreakable one, Michael Elgin. A four-corner survival with Adam Page, Cedric Alexander, Don Castle, and Cliff Compton making his return to Ring of Honor. Adam Cole versus Will Ferrara, Silas Young, and the Beer City Bruiser versus All Night Express. A Women of Honor match, Kelly Klein versus Ray Lynn. And then the Addiction, Moose, and Caprice Coleman, all stars signed to appear. So, you know, Mikio, your boy Adam Cole is going up against Will Ferrara. This is obviously an important match for a young guy like Ferrara. Is he ready to cut his teeth up against a guy like Adam Cole? And this is the main show. This is Glory by Honor 14. So this match, what do you think it leads to?
I don't know. It's like half of me thinks it's going to work very similarly to the match that Cole had with Cheeseburger on one of the recent house shows, where he dominates and he mocks and he does that. I wouldn't be, honestly speaking, I wouldn't be surprised if he has to resort to real heavy duty cheating to beat Ferrara, because I think they've pushed Ferrara in a lot stronger of a way than they did with, you know, they've ever done with Cheeseburger. So maybe he kind of mocks him and goes on, you know, grabs the mic from the table like he did during that match and starts doing commentary and you know, mocking his opponent. But then maybe Ferrara does have a strong comeback and even pushes the envelope of almost winning, and then Cole has to, you know, has to cheat to win or cheat to change momentum so he can get the win. They definitely want to push Ferrara, and that's not a bad thing. He's a good young guy. There's nothing wrong with him. Is he ready to be in this match? Sure. If Dijak is ready to be in a match against AJ Styles, there's no reason why someone like Ferrara shouldn't be in a match against Adam Cole. So I have no problems with it at all. But I think Cole will just continue to do the cheat to win and be the that smarmy, real shit, you know, shit eating shit grin heel that he's been doing on the last few shows. And there's nothing wrong with that. That should be fine. I don't think the match will go much more than, like, you know, 10, 12 minutes. But I think you can get a lot done in that short period of time. And you know Cole will somehow get involved in the main event. You just know he's not going to only be on the show once. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Ferrara's been given his all every time he's been on TV lately and every time we've seen him live. So I think it's cool, and I think it's a good opportunity for him to be in there with a guy who's really talented.
Ari, what do you think?
I kind of have a crazy theory, to pronounce that correctly. I think that... You know, I think what Miguel says is partially true. I think Ferrara will get a much better shot at Cole in terms of he's going to get a lot more offense than people might expect. But I think Cole's going to pretty handily beat him in about 6 to 8 minutes. And then I think Moose might end up challenging him in a match, because Moose and Will Ferrara, you know, they've been ring against each other. They're also, there's a respect kind of broship there that's never been fully officialized, but I just made that up. That word up. But it's been there in the history of ROH in the last few years. They've been on Future of Honor shows as a team together and all that. I think maybe Moose might come out and go, hey, you're beating this guy up. Why don't you try me on for size? And you've got a feature match there. At least that's what I would do. But I mean, that's my theory. I'm putting it out there. Other than that, I mean, I think this is a decent spotlight for Ferrara. But I think a guy like Dalton Castle benefited a lot. Will benefit a lot more from his match a couple months ago against Adam Cole than Ferrara will, because unfortunately, I mean, Ferrara, for him, he's a good dude in terms of being an underdog, but there's not, I don't see where he goes in terms of an upward trajectory in the promotion. I think he's sort of just slotted in the same spot that a lot of people who've come before him in that spot have been, which is not that bad. It's a decent spot for a small undercard guy, but I mean, it's not going to be more beneficial than say Dalton Castle getting a win against Cole the previous night if that happens, which I also don't expect to happen. But if it did, I think Castle winning over Cole would be a fantastic move. But I just don't see Ferrara getting a win over Cole. And even if he does, I don't think it's going to do much for him. I think it's going to be viewed as a fluke, an extreme upset, and that's a dangerous thing. I don't think you put over. Put Cole under in that situation, especially now with where he's heading with his heel turn and getting a lot of heel heat for it.
Yeah, give Ferrara some real big hope spots kind of thing like that, but then, quash it with Cole going over at the end.
Kind of a theme here, and I guess that is something that Jerome, Ari, I think actually we've all talked about it, the when it comes to the depth on the roster, and it kind of feels like this weekend, and maybe there's been a little bit of it in the past few months. So you talked about it earlier, Dijak getting a shot at AJ Styles. On this show, he's also getting a shot against Michael Elgin. So guys like Dijak and Ferrara getting to basically go up against some of the bigger names, and if they have good showings, then I think the Ring of Honor faithful will, kind of latch onto them. What do you guys think about Ari? What do you think about Dijak up against Elgin and AJ Styles, since we didn't really talk about that?
I like the combo of Dijak and Elgin. I think it's kind of a natural with the power game that both have rather. And Dijak's this big lanky, big muscular dude rather, and Elgin's kind of a shorter but also massive dude. So I think that combination works. The Styles and Dijak match could be okay, but there's always the political specter of Styles being attached to New Japan, and I just don't know if Dijak will get as much and be perceived to look as on the same level after that match, because Styles has to be protected in some way because of his connections in New Japan. So I prefer this match on the 24th in Dayton to the first match. I think if Dijak does really well against Elgin, that may actually do much more for him than the match against AJ Styles. But I'm sure Dijak being, I mean, he loves any opportunity. You see on his Twitter, he really relishes wrestling a diverse amount of wrestlers, wrestling different guys, and learning from those experiences. So I think for him, this is going to be a great weekend, a career weekend for him, because he gets to wrestle a guy on the level of an AJ Styles and be featured in the upper card against Elgin.
He's had some really great matches in Beyond Wrestling, so hopefully some of you that are listening to this have checked that out. Mikio, your thoughts on it?
Just a quick kind of thing, if you think about it, it's like if they're doing Dijak with Styles on the first night and they're planning on having Styles go over Jay Lethal on the second night, maybe Jay Lethal interjects himself somewhere in the Styles Dijak match, not obviously costing Styles the match because we know that's not going to happen. But at least kind of starting to get into or to build that feud going forward towards the end of the year, beginning of next year with Styles and Lethal.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That makes sense.
Also, we have the like we mentioned, War Machine versus the Briscoes. We talked about this kind of, how the Briscoes are back in the tag division, and War Machine, they should get a win here, I think.
Oh, I agree. I think they should win. I think the War Machine should win this match, no question about it.
Ari?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a brawler, which is good. And I just hope, they, you know, last time they had this match, or the first time I should say, there was some, I think, wasn't that the match somebody got injured, I think, or there was something going on where I think Rogue got injured around that time. So
yeah.
I don't know. I hope this one just goes off without a hitch. That's, but I'm sure it will.
It'll be one of JR's classic slobber knockers.
Just for fun, the Four Corner Survival match, Adam Page, Dalton Castle, Cedric Alexander, Cliff Compton. Personally, I'm hoping that Cedric Alexander gets the win here because he's, I mean, you know, he's had the feud with Moose, which was big, and Moose had his comeuppance at the end. So I want them to continue because Cedric Alexander, he's so good. I really want him to continue being on that winning streak. I don't want him to be the guy relegated back to losing match after match after match. But Mickey, what do you think?
Honestly, they could go so many different directions with this. I think the one person we know who's in this match won't win is Compton, obviously. Castle seems to be maybe on a downward spiral now that he's lost his boys, kind of thing like that. So then it leaves you with Paige and Alexander, and it's like, where are they kind of going with Paige at this point now that he's had that no-holds-barred? It hasn't aired on TV yet, but he's had the no-holds-barred match with Jay Briscoe, and now Jay's back in the tag team division. Where do you go with him? He's kind of lost, I think, at this point. So I think the obvious choice to win this match has got to be Cedric to kind of get momentum back after losing the big feud ender, if you will, to Moose.
All right, yes. Who wins this?
Cedric Alexander in the middle of the ring with the wrench.
And he pins who? Compton?
Dalton Castle.
Ah, make him even more sad. So then we have Silas Young and the Beer City Bruiser going up against the All Night Express. The All Night Express, they got to win this, right? That's just a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, they've been hot as hell since they've come back, so why not, right?
I look forward to the boys being used as physical props with maybe Silas Young just like tossing them into ANX or Beer City Bruiser or like throwing the keg at them and they fall backwards into Kenny King or Red Titus. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they're used in this match, but I definitely see ANX winning in the end.
And the Women of Honor match, Kelly Klein versus Ray Lynn. I'm not familiar enough with either of them. So,
yep.
I know I've heard of Ray Lynn more than I've heard of Kelly Klein, but Kelly Klein is with BJ Whitmer with that kind of, I don't want to say, I mean, I don't think she's affiliated with the Decade, but if she's with Whitmer, then I guess she is. So actually, didn't they put out, it wasn't there like a promo or something about BJ Whitmer talking about her? So I guess she's not a part of the Decade, but she's kind of like being endorsed by them, right?
Yeah, at least endorsed by BJ.
Yeah. So, but I've heard of Ray Lynn. So I'll go with her to win. I'm sorry.
What do you know about her, if anything?
No, since I post a lot of the results up on the website and see results for a lot of shows, I've seen her name more often than I've ever seen Kelly Klein's. So
okay,
yeah, I'm not saying I know anything about her.
Okay, I guess we'll see.
Yep. So yeah, unless there's any other thoughts about Glory Bonner, I think we can move on to some of the Ring of Honor news. Survival of the Fittest has been announced, and Ari, I have not kept up, I guess, as well as I should have on some of the news. Some of the names have already been announced, including a qualifying match, which will be match 5 between ACH and Matt Sydal on Survival of the Fittest Night 1, November 13th. So, Ari, do you have some of the details right there in front of you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So Survival of the Fittest is once again a two-night series. Night one will be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and this year the field is it's 18 wrestlers, and there's actually going to be a series of different matches. It's going to be 2 4-corner matches, 2 triple threat matches, 2 singles matches, and then there's one winner out of each of those matches. The 6 of them advance to the 6-man elimination the second night, November 14 in Hopkins, Minnesota. So so far, half the field has been announced. Mark Briscoe, Jay Briscoe, Michael Elgin, ACH, Matt Sydal. As we just said, they're announced to their final match in the best of 5, which is tied at 2 at this point. And so it's also for a spot in the finals. So that's one of the 2 singles matches announced. And then the other participants so far announced are Moose, Ray Rowe, Hansen and Dalton Castle. So there's your field for the tournament right now. And every year the winner of that tournament match, the survival of the fittest, they end up getting a title shot. So it should be interesting to see who's spotted. A few former winners in there right now, and a lot of newcomers to the tournament. So it should be interesting.
Both nights have announced AJ Styles, the Young Bucks, The Addiction, Jay Lethal, and Roderick Strong. So yeah, these shows are probably going to be pretty stacked. And with the tournament style, honestly, I'm looking forward to this weekend more than I am Glory by Honor. I can't lie about that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure about them splitting it into two nights. I honestly feel like it's like a little bit of a they're trying to water it a little. They're trying to stretch it out a little bit. Not that it's watered down, but like in the previous years, it seems to me like you could just do the six man on the same night as the first night, and it would be fine. But they're trying to get a little bit of extra out of it.
Now, I hope they do something interesting with how they decide, like how they present who gets put into each match. That could be a lot of fun to, like, see all the guys, like, in the locker room kind of thing, like that, or in a boardroom, and
Yeah,
they
like
like draw and they
chalkboard
do
or
like they
something.
draw names out of a hat kind of thing, like, oh, you're gonna be in this match, you're gonna be in that match. And I think they could have a lot of fun doing something like that, but I don't see them doing it. I just don't. It's too obvious of a good idea for them to actually
It's a
do.
little bit of a it's a little bit outside the box for them, but it would be interesting to see if they could do something off like that.
I mean,
I
so
do.
so then you could have guys, complain, oh, you got an easy match, I gotta be in this match with all these other guys, what the hell?
Sure. Well, you can do
So
that in promos anyway.
it would be a great TV kind of, thing to show, to like, to present leading into it. But you're right, they won't do it. There's no way they won't do it.
I do want to say something I was wrong about at the All-Star Extravaganza. I was proven wrong way before, like my theory on how the ACH Seidel series would go, with ACH being down 2-0 and having to win back to back in his hometown. That did not happen. But
Your storyline was so much better than what actually happened, though, in my opinion, because it made
I
sense.
actually it did it did. I them splitting wins back and forth. It's kind of like okay. But I think the in-ring has been some really good stuff. I think like it's proven dividends for ACH. There's been some exciting stuff with him and Seidel. Some subtle stuff with him with Seidel and them getting mad at each other, but still having respect. Like at the end of the match this past week, where they both held up the two fingers, because Matt Seidel holds up the two for peace, but it also stood for ACH held it up to stand for two wins. And at the end of the match, because Seidel wins, he holds it up to him to represent they both have two wins each. So I thought that was pretty clever. And each finish has played off of each other. So like the match three at All-Star Extravaganza, ACH hit the Midnight Star 450 splash to win. And then in this match last week on TV, he tried it and got knees, and that allowed Seidel to get the Shooting Star Press for the win. So there's been some interesting back and forth. I think it's pretty much been exactly what we expected it to be, a good athletic competition between both and something to kind of take up time for them. But I think this match may, I mean, last year at Survival Fittest 2014, these guys wrestled against each other in the qualifying match. Seidel won. I think this is ACH's opportunity to win and advance and get that big push. But there's an opportunity to do something interesting here, just n not just for the sports of it, the sporting competition that they both have. Maybe add more to the characters, and it's been done in subtle ways, but now that we're at the end, I think they really need to kind of decide what next for both of them.
So do we want to discuss some of the recent Ring of Honor TV taping rate, well, viewership? I mean, they've gone up and down. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason to it, I would say. It's just, some things are more interesting. I guess some matches are more interesting than others, because I just don't feel like there's anything we can really gauge from it. Just because, like, for example, I've seen on Twitter a lot that, oh, when the New Japan guys are on TV, that's when their ratings go up. So obviously this relationship is good. And I agree with that kind of an assessment, but
That's not exactly true.
exactly.
The low one of the lowest ratings was for, unbelievably, for the Adam Cole versus Nakamura match that was taped in Philly.
Right.
And then the next week, one of the highest ratings was for the Okada Strong match from Field of Honor, which, again, like, it's weird. It's not weird that Okada would draw high ratings, but why wouldn't Nakamura and Cole? I mean, it's But the difference is like about 50 to 60,000 people. So how, I don't know how serious you can take, you know, being up or down about these numbers.
I agree. Yeah, and since we don't really get, you know, you don't get the quarters, so you can't really tell, like, what matches are making this go up or go down. We're just getting an average overall of the night, so there's not a whole lot. I mean, unless, I don't know, I have no real thoughts on it.
Well, then last week...
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Miguel.
No, I feel the same way that you do, Chris. It's like, because we can't see what's, you know, what people really like and what people don't like, it makes it complicated to make any kind of blanket statement regarding, you know, what's working and what's not. So it's weird. It's weird to think that a match like Cole and Nakamura didn't generate more interest. It really does strike me as odd, but you never know. You never know.
And then here's the thing. The last week had almost a strong rate. Like, I think it was in the 170s, 170,000 viewers, for Okada Strong, and pretty similar for this past week, which was Lethal versus Watanabe in a TV title match, and ACH Matt Sydal. So, you know, that's not a bad show, but it's definitely not the premier label that you would give, you know, Okada versus Strong and Cole versus Nakamura. So, again, it's the number, but again, it did well for, relatively speaking, for its time slot. I mean, How much can you expect? You know, they've been given, Destination America has given Ring of Honor no advertisement whatsoever, even during Impact. It's an 11 p.m. time slot. I mean, I know I'm falling asleep because I got to teach the next day. So I'm watching the shows on ROHWrestling.com now, as opposed to, I mean, I'm splitting. If I can stay up, I'll watch it on Destination America. If not, I mean, the last few weeks, I've just caught it on the website. So... There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of relative, you know, things to consider. And, you know, the one thing you can say is that, you know, this is just part of their audience. It's not their entire audience. So, you know, what else do you want from them? You know, they're some weeks are going to be good weeks, some weeks are going to be bad weeks. And it's really a very fine line as far as that goes. But, you know, 170,000 for 11 p.m. on a TV channel that a lot of people don't know about and doesn't give them any advertisement. I mean, okay.
Yeah, exactly. If we're going to say, oh, they should be doing that, ultimately it comes back down to, well, SPG should be spending more money on advertising. And if they're not...
No, not SPG, Destination America.
Oh, okay. Destination.
I mean, and SPG, yes. But Destination America has given them no ad time. Has given them nothing. Nothing. It is amazing, you know, the non-factor that they've given, you know, in terms of how they've treated ROH, and that ROH is still, they're still there in that situation, every week, until December, and then we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, let's call a spade a spade. When they moved the show to 11 o'clock, it kind of doomed the ability to have any kind of huge numbers. When they were the lead in to TNA at 8 o'clock, you knew that they had the ability to draw because it's 8 o'clock at night. The 11 o'clock hour is just so hard to do like a number bigger than what they've been doing. Just like, let's be honest, most people are going to bed or are already sleeping. So it's moving it to that hour was just so bad for the numbers, and it's like we really can't judge how successful the show is because it's on at such an awful time.
That is true. That is true. So yeah, unless
think about it like this: when ECW first got their TV deal here in New York City on MSG, it was on at like 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, hardcore fans like myself and Ari were probably staying up because it was a Saturday night into Sunday morning. We didn't give a shit. But, you know, when you're doing it, if it was on a weeknight where you have responsibilities the next morning, you're not going to stay up. You would have programmed your VCR back then to tape your ECW show so you can come home from work the next day and watch it. It's like you're never going to generate the interest that you potentially could by when you put something on at a horrible time slot.
Agreed. So
uh-huh.
Yeah,
agree.
No, it's it is what it is. So I feel like this being the podcast of honor, it be kind of remiss if we didn't talk about some of the stuff that is going down this weekend, even though it's not necessarily Ring of Honor related. But it kind of, I mean, it, there's tangentials there. Sami Zayn being at Evolve, being, you know, Evolve being booked by Gabe and owned by Sal, and, you know, we all know the rumors going around about the relationship between WWE Live and WWE. Guys, this is, even though it's not, like I said, quote unquote Ring of Honor related, this is just, this is huge news. You know, it's, we don't know what's going to happen going forward, the ramifications of it for independent wrestling, bad or good, and I think it's more positive than negative. It's pretty exciting, and it is happening in New York. I know that neither of you have gone to the shows or are going, but, you know, I'll go to you first. I mean, this is kind of big. It's the former El Generico back on the independent scene, kind of being helped by WWE, working with a Gabe Sapolsky-run independent promotion. I mean, this is just 5 years ago. You would have never said this would have happened.
Well, that is true, what you just said. And so this is big, relatively speaking, because especially if this is just the beginning of what could be a larger relationship with WWN Networks or WWN Live, I should say, and WWE, then, you know, maybe bigger things are yet to come. But I mean, this was an interesting moment in terms of independent wrestling to have a WWE contracted guy or NXT contracted guy come in and make an appearance. But again, it's all relative because Sami Zayn came in, he did autographs, he did an in-ring promo, he put over Johnny Gargano, but it was not shown on, it will not be shown on their broadcast, was not shown on the pay-per-view, it was after the fact. He did not wrestle for them, and I don't think he could wrestle because I think he's still hurt, but, you know, the fact that WWE agreed to this, made overtures, and that, you know, WWE.com is sort of its own entity in and of itself these days. So what happens on that website does not necessarily mean that it's approved of or condoned, but in some level it does. And there was an article this week about the five top Evolve wrestlers that could be WWE NXT people, essentially, that they, you know, rookie prospects, essentially. And Zack Sabre Jr. was mentioned among others. And so there's this, the thing that was rumored to happen going back to May or June, this tightening relationship between WWE and WWE with Evolve, the fact that it's bearing fruit is definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, WWE has been bringing in independent contracted wrestlers into NXT for the last 2 years, so it's not that this wasn't going to happen anyway. That they, oh, now that they have an in with Evolve, they're going to just bring more people in. I mean, it's just the way it's been the last 2 years, where they are bringing in a lot of the name guys that we always said, oh, when are they going to go to WWE? Now they're being brought into WWE. It's definitely changing the pipeline, so to speak, if that's what's going to happen, where away from ROH, more to Gabe's network of promotions. So that's something to keep an eye on. But, yeah, this is something we would not have seen. I mean, the closest comparison is when CM Punk came in to ROH back in 06 for the unscripted show during the snowstorm, and he was not scheduled to wrestle. He's not given permission to wrestle, and he ended up wrestling anyway for ROH at that point. So yeah, I'm sure it was exciting for the people who were at the show. It's a great opportunity for Gabe to have a closer relationship with WWE, but you know, to me, this is really only the beginning, and what happens after is the most important stuff. Sami Zayn didn't wrestle here. Will, in the future, a WWE contracted wrestler wrestle for Evolve? And will that be made into a big deal? And will there be like a guy like Gargano and Ciampa, now that they're on NXT, have been on NXT a couple times, now does that lead to them making more frequent appearances? Do they mention the word Evolve and promote the promotion on NXT? There's a lot of variables up in the air.
Mikio, any thoughts on this? I know back in the day, I think we're all big El Generico fans. So
I think Ari really kind of hit every point that needed to be hit. I mean, it's interesting. It's something that bears you to keep your eyes on it. my first thought when I heard about kind of all this going forward is like, I guess they really are creating a minor, like, you know, they're going to use it Evolve sort of as a direct feeder to NXT, and where does it leave other indie promotions? But I think at this point, you know, WWE is just looking for talent no matter where it is, and if they can maybe help direct guys to, you know, the WWN family of promotions, that's something that would be cool for them. Do I think it really impacts like ROH directly or negatively in any way? I don't think so. I think guys who want to work ROH are still going to work ROH, and guys who are in ROH who are going to, they're still going to draw attention from WWE because there are so many ROH alumni in WWE and in NXT that they would definitely put their friends into a position where they'd, you know, be telling people, this is the guy you got to go for next, this is the guy you got to go for next. So, yeah, I think it's just really interesting to think that, you know, maybe some of the people who are in the front office positions in the WWE are looking at what's going on in the indie scene and saying to themselves, you know, maybe it's really time that we really do focus our attention on some of this talent that's out there instead of, you know, just recycling the same talents that we have here. And I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm not, because as soon as I finish saying this, they'll book Randy Orton and Sheamus to have another match again this week. But at the same time, it's like maybe they're starting to realize that there has to be some sort of long-term idea for finding younger talent to bring it in. And they've done a good job with it with NXT. But then again, you know, you sit and you watch NXT on a Wednesday night and you see some of the guys that they have and you just like, you scratch your head and say, I don't ever see this guy being up on WWE programming. So maybe they're just trying to throw a lot of shit against the wall and see what sticks. I mean, that's how it strikes to me. But it must have been really cool, though, if you were at the show last night to participate in the meet and greet with Sammy. And then I've seen the promo. I saw what he said. It popped up all over the internet this morning, and even late last night for that matter. And it was good. It was him. You know, it was just a straight up, you know, put it over kind of situation. And it was must have been really, really cool to have the opportunity to kind of be up close and personal with a guy who you've known from the past, you know, as another character, but now to see him where he is today and listen to him talk really for the first time as an indie fan. Because you got to remember, it's like, you know, when he worked as Generico, he never spoke. And to put him in front of that crowd that's seen him work so many times but never actually heard him speak or have him address them directly, that must have been pretty cool. I heard the match with Gargano and Ethan Page was really, really quite good. So I'd be curious to see, you know, to see the match and get the feel for maybe if there was any kind of change to the overall packaging of the Evolve show.
Agreed. And you can actually check out the video of its promo right now, pwponderings.com. We have it up on the website. So, yeah, unless there's anything else, guys, I think we can get out of here and get some plugs in with Mikio. You going first?
I got really nothing going on right now. As you know, we have we in the Podcast of Honor have a close relationship with Tier 1 Wrestling and the people who run that. So when they run another show coming up in New York at some point in the near future, I definitely should suggest you get out and go support the really growing and hot indie promotion here in New York City. I'm on Twitter, Chris. It's at Chris_Mikio. You know, I'm on there. I'm talking a lot. And if you have anything you want to say about the podcast or anything you hear us talk about here, please feel free. If you think we suck, tell me we suck. If you like what we do, tell me you like what we do. Any kind of feedback is really, really, you know, welcome to that. Also, if you're interested in joining a group on Facebook that covers pro wrestling, the group that Ari and Chris and myself are all admins with. It's called We Love Pro Wrestling, and I definitely think you should look into it because there's a lot of good discussion and a lot of good people in there. So please come and check us out.
We do our best to keep the trolls out. As always, you can check out Tier 1 Wrestling. They are in High Spots, and if you buy from there, you should use our High Spots link. Or just go pwponderings.com/highspots. You should save that in your bookmarks, your favorites, whatever. So both shows are up there right now, or you can go to WN Live, and they're on there too. So two big platforms where for you to watch the shows. Ari, what do you have going on?
Not too much, just the same twitter.com/AriBerenstein, or type in column 1 in your search bar and you'll find it. And yeah, that's pretty much it, man. I'm just we do the Podcast of Honor and that's it. I guess there's nothing much else to plug for me, but keep it on pwponderings.com because there's some good stuff on there.
Can I get one last thing out there, Chris?
Absolutely.
Ring of Honor, I know you're listening.
Oh, God. Because
I know you listen to us.
Here we go.
Here we go. We've been talking about this for a while. We know the 14th anniversary show is going to be in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Some of us who have to fly from one side of the country to another to come see this said 14th anniversary show, meaning myself.
Who would like to go see this
show? Meaning myself, my wife, and Ari would love to come out west to see the show, but you guys are really dragging your feet on announcing the dates because Ari and I are teachers here in New York City, and we have a week off in February, and we're hoping that it could coincides with that. So we can actually come and enjoy the city and enjoy the show, but
we
you're not helping us right now. So please, I am begging you, announce the dates so we can book flights and hotel rooms and buy the tickets and come out to the show because we really want to be there in a city like Las Vegas to support a product that Ari and I have been supporting in person at live shows since 2004. Ari went to his first show in 2003. I didn't do mine until 2004. That's right? 2003,
2004? 04, early 04.
Okay. So we've been coming live for over, you know, for 11 years at this point. So please, we want to be there for this big show. Just announce the date. Give us a date. I don't even care if you don't even say what the venue is. Just tell me the date so I know I can book and come. All right? Please, I beg you. I'll say it again. Please. That's it. I'm off my soapbox.
That's a very impassioned speech right there.
It was. I was going to say something snarky, but no, I'm not. So, of course,
I got you to not say something snarky? Yes!
Amazing, right? So, of course, thank you, everyone, for listening. Of course, check out all the new stuff, pwponderings.com. We want to thank everyone who's been checking out the newscast. As an update to that, at some point I'll make my return to that. I don't know when. It's you know, it's been really great trying to get a lot of other stuff done outside the website, also training some people. And a big thank you to Reese, who recently has taken up some of the load for posting results on the weekend, and he's been doing a great job at that. So thank you to Reese for all that. And, of course, check us out, PW Ponderings on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and everywhere else. And thank you all. We'll talk to you again real soon.